From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The family of George Floyd has just released the result of a privately conducted autopsy that showed the 46-year-old man died of asphyxiation and loss of blood flow to his brain. The finding confirms what much of America has seen with its eyes in the video that captured Floyd's last moments as an officer's knee remained lodged on his neck for over 8 minutes. The horror of Floyd's death has sparked a mass uprising across the country today that my guest says was inevitable. Zenobia Jeffries is Yes Magazine's racial justice editor and author of the new article, An Uprising Was Inevitable. Welcome to the program, Zenobia.
Thank you, Sonali.
So why do you say it was inevitable? Obviously for people like yourself who have paid attention to these issues for a very long time, it seems obvious, but I'm wondering if the rest of America, if those, you know, who get their news diet from CNN or maybe even Fox News, should they have been surprised by this?
No, they should not have. I mean, we've seen it with Ferguson, over 5 years ago. And that was just a beginning. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that didn't last longer. And police killings have continued. They're continuing even now. There have been deaths reported by police officers during these protests and use of excessive force. There have been stories reported of families not being able to know where their loved ones are who've been taken away or arrested by police. So it's not surprising. It should not have been surprising. I think the only thing that has tapped maybe into some people's psyche that was there all along for Black people is seeing the life leave George Floyd's body. I think that incensed a lot of people, but that's an image that folks in Black and brown communities have been seeing for a very long time. It's like, oh, now you believe us. But these are the things that we've been seeing. These are the things that we've been saying. So it shouldn't be surprising, no.
It seems as though, especially if you watch the mainstream news media or read the mainstream newspapers, that they finally seem to get it. But just as you were saying, communities have been saying that police are killing them without provocation for decades now. And I suppose it has needed video evidence for them to believe Black communities?
Which is absurd, Sonali. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, and do you still believe us? Because now people are out protesting and we've diverted the whole narrative to good protests versus bad protests, peaceful protests versus violent protest. And a protest is a protest. You can't label it. It's not good or bad. It's what works. It's a protest. It's meant to disrupt. It's meant to get the attention of the powers that be to say enough is enough. And so you can't tell us how we should protest, right? I mean, when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, people didn't like that. That was disruptive. It was un-American. He was called out of his name. Profanity was used toward him by the so-called president of this country. And so now people are out in the streets and they're tearing up things. And it's like, oh, don't do that. That's violent. And I think there have been a lot of commentary lately about the whole idea of a social order, a social contract, right, that the people have just been going along with. And now they're saying no more. No more. Enough is enough. And so if Americans were really paying attention to what is happening to the most vulnerable Americans, then none of this would be surprising right now. I mean, we see what happened with George Floyd. And on that same day, we saw what happened in Central Park, where it's like white Americans are very much aware of the power and authority that they wield. Right. When the woman, Amy Cooper, said, I'm going to call the police and I'm going to tell them that an African-American man is threatening my life. I mean, they know that. And then when you see Chauvin kneeling just with his knee and his hands in his pockets and so cold looking, he wasn't threatened. You know, that's usually the narrative, right? Is that officers have to act within a second of their life and they're scared too. And they're, this man made a conscious decision to snuff out another man's life. And we're seeing that. And you can't unsee that. And you can't unhear what Amy Cooper said. And it's all connected.
You write in your article about the trauma that you and so many Americans are feeling through this. That is just the latest straw of a much, much longer term trauma. When we talk about that trauma, what is necessary in your mind to frame the protests? Because the protests are multiracial.
Right. The protests initially started that Black Lives Matter. So the focus of the protest is still that Black Lives Matter. There are people from other races who are joining in on that. And then there are some people who are protesting capitalism, how our economic system has failed us, how all of our systems have failed us. I mean, and that was the straw. Is the racial component, right? And when you're in racial equity trainings and sessions and we're working toward dismantling racism, we're saying if you're not looking at all these problems through a racial lens, you're not going to address the problems. And so that's what this is now. I mean, and this is nothing new either in the civil rights movement and in the movements before, in the abolition movement. Black folks were leading those movements saying that we are human. We have rights. You all have to treat us in this way. And then the women's movement jumped on that. So movements for Black lives, although they weren't always called that, have always paved the way for other movements and other races to join in on what's happening. So that's what I see happening right now.
Remarkably, the police responded to protests over their violence with more violence. How do you respond to that?
Yes. It's what they do. It's what we know that they do. It's what those in authoritative positions know that they do. It's what those in legislative positions know what they do. It's the DNA of the police, right? It's to protect property. It's to keep white folks safe, right? And to punish Black folks. I mean, that's the origin of police in this country, is to protect white people and white people's property. And that's what's happening. And that's what's continuing to happen. In the authoritative figures and the legislators, they all know this. I think it was on Monday. I'm in Seattle right now. I'm from Detroit, but I moved to Seattle earlier part of this year. And I heard the chief of police made a statement that there's all this oversight over the Seattle police, right? And a colleague of mine brought up today in a conversation that there is no real oversight. There needs to be federal oversight over all of the police departments across this country. I mean, they have like a community policing commission or something. I'm just starting to get into and know how things, you know, are working here. But and some other organization that's supposed to be providing some kind of oversight that are police officers themselves. So you can't ask the police to police themselves, right? We need some kind of federal oversight to watch and see what these police officers are doing and change the policies, because outside of that, outside of it coming from on high, it's not going to change unless it changes in the streets. And that's what the people are saying, right? Because these authoritative big chief best knows. I mean, and I think of Charlena Lyles, who was killed in 2017, right? And 2 years later, a judge dismissed her family's claim. And still now they're still going through that. So there's still no justice. There's been no justice for Breonna Taylor. You know, we had to hear Ahmaud Arbery's story had to go national before anybody did anything about that. And
that's
that's
a really important point, because these criticisms that we hear from politicians, from some in the media, from, you know, even people in our social circle, the violence mars the protest. Honestly, we do need to admit that Had a few windows not been broken, had some police cars not been set on fire, had the precinct, third precinct in Minneapolis not been burnt down, would we be having these conversations? Would the FBI have announced an investigation into Breonna Taylor's killing? Would Derek Chauvin even have been arrested?
Exactly. And violence begets violence, Sonali. Folks in this country know that. That's the only thing that they apparently respond to.
I mean, of course, this is not to justify or to say, let's continue to be violent. But as Martin Luther King Jr. said, riot is the language of the unheard. People weren't being heard.
Yeah, I'm not condoning whatsoever, you know, the violence and the destruction. But I understand it. I understand it. And when I wrote that piece, all of the national disruptions hadn't even happened yet. And I understand it. You know, I understand people's frustration. In Seattle, after the Saturday night, after the uprising Saturday night, the protest that night, there was a lot of damage done. And about 100 volunteers of Seattleites came out and cleaned up. And so on one part, I'm like, I'm new here. Like, well, that's good, because in Detroit, we're still seeing the Mars of the 1967 uprisings, right? The destruction that's still there, the abandoned buildings, the closed down businesses, all of that. They came out, they boarded up, they cleaned up. It, as if nothing happened. And then one part of me was like, oh, that's different, that's nice. But on a real level, it's like, you all are trying to erase what just happened so that you don't have to pay attention to it, so that you don't have to see it. And you know, no, see this, be discomforted by this, be upset, be angered enough to do something about it, And I went out to the protest, you know, following that. And they were, well, actually, I went out for a walk, and the protest had just kind of, you know, organically emerged again. It wasn't a protest that was planned. And I video recorded a young man saying that same thing. You know, he was so angry, and I understood that rage. I understood that anger. He said, you all are out here cleaning up. Why? So you don't have to see it? So you don't have to see us? So you can just go on as, you know, business like usual. And that's what we cannot do. If I spoke to Jeremiah Ellison, who's a council member in Minnesota, and he was saying how the leadership there failed, you know, by having police out in the protest initially, and different things that they had done that they could have done differently. And if we don't do something differently right now, in this time, then we have failed, and we're going to continue to see people out in the streets rising up.
Finally, President Trump descended into a bunker at the White House. Apparently, he's rattled by the protests that were happening right outside the White House. Washington, D.C. burned over the weekend. But do you fear that a person like him reacts to that fear that he's feeling with exactly the wrong response, right? We're basically seeing him ratchet up the violence. I actually don't think this is hyperbolic to say, I think he would actually like to see a new civil war. I mean, he's literally calling on his base to show up. He's calling on state governors to smash the protesters, to sick dogs on them.
Yeah, I think he would like nothing more than for this to continue so that he can suspend the elections in November. And that's one of the things that we can't allow to happen. He's a poor leader. He's been a poor leader. He's unfit for presidential office, anybody's presidential office. He shouldn't be there. And those are just the facts. Those are just the facts. And so, yeah, I think that that's really what the aim is, quite frankly.
Well, Zenobia, we will post a link to your Yes Magazine article, An Uprising Was Inevitable, from our website. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time and your insight.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Take care.
My guest is Zenobia Jeffries-Warfield. She is the executive editor of Yes Magazine, and we've been talking about the mass uprising around the nation against racist policing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.